Welcome to this BizNews briefing where we unpack the top stories making news locally and globally. It's Monday, the 22nd of September. I'm Bronwyn Nielsen. Today's top stories centre around Helen Zille and her election as the DA's candidate for mayor of the city of Johannesburg. We hear from Helen herself and bring you political analysis on the move. In international news, Trump says the US economy may well shut down. And we give you insights into NVIDIA's $5 billion deal with Intel. Let's start at the beginning. This past weekend, DA federal leader John Steenhuisen took to the stage in Soweto to make a bold announcement.
Drum roll, please. I want to introduce to you a daughter of the city. A leader I believe in. Someone we can all believe in. Because she's done it before and she's going to do it again for Josie. Please welcome Helen Zille.
Zille, now 74, didn't hold back in her acceptance speech. She painted a vivid picture of Johannesburg's decline and her vision for its revival. Let's take a listen to a powerful excerpt from that speech delivered in Soweto.
Joburg's people will never give up on her, and I am one of them. We will not let Joburg's taps stay dry. We won't accept brokenness as the new normal. We will wrestle our city back from the criminal mafia and return her to those who love her. When you drive through those potholed roads in the darkness, where every broken streetlight represents a failed promise, I share your despair. It doesn't have to be like this, but it will be if we do not make the choice for change now. The time has come. This time it must be different. It is literally now or never. City unite to save it from the forces for bad. Let's put the darkness behind us. Together we can make the city of gold shine on our country, our continent, and all of the world. That is the Joburg that you dreamt of, and that we will work for, and that you deserve.
To understand the deeper implications of this move, we turn to political analyst Dr. Franz Cronier. In a recent interview, he called Zille's candidacy the most consequential political job in the country. Here's a clip from that conversation.
This is the biggest political chess move in the country in more than a decade. And should she, the elections are likely early 2027. So she's got a good year plus on the campaign trail in Johannesburg. Johannesburg is not in a good place. It's deteriorating. The city government is not able to arrest that deterioration. The provincial government is not able to arrest the deterioration either. And should Helen Zille over the next year be able to position her campaign in Johannesburg in such a way that she wins the city with a majority, because that's important, in the local elections, likely early 2027, and then, which she is capable of, lead a process over the next year or 18 months to stage some kind of recovery in the city, which isn't difficult given how far it's fallen. Based on our understanding of a lot of other data, we think that achievement will be perhaps the thing that breaks a big block of the ANC vote for the DA come the election in 2029.
And this morning I sat down with Zilla herself, where we spoke candidly about fixing Johannesburg, the DA's strategy, and the future of the government of national unity. Here's a short excerpt from the interview where Helen responds to some of the allegations Cyril has thrown her way in a recent exclusive interview with News 24's Mandy Wiener.
These are extraordinary myths that get built up. In the DA, we have clear job descriptions. I am the equivalent of the Secretary General of the party. Now, it's true, a Secretary General has a very big role to play and has a lot of power over the organization per se. And there are many, many departments in a functional political party. So, for example, there is an election function, which is enormously important. There's a candidate selection function, which is different, but also enormously important. There's a communication function. There's a marketing function. There's a fundraising function. There's a management of the governance units function. There's a policy function. And all of those functions in the DA have departments. They have systems and processes that get run. There's an excellent chief operations officer called Liana van Wyk, and she and I work on managing the organization. So absolutely, Cyril is right that we do have a lot of power, but John is the political leader. He is the key person driving our role in government, and they are complementary roles, not competing roles.
Cyril goes further to say that he's very disappointed that the DA operates as an opposition party in the coalition rather than as a partner. Again, I'm going to ask you how you respond.
Well, we're very disappointed that the ANC hasn't realized that we're a partner, never consults us, never respects the statement of intent, has never applied the sufficient consensus clause, violated our agreement even before the ink was dry by unilaterally inviting other parties into the coalition, not honoring the proportionality clause. So if they don't want to act as a partner, and if they think that we're only there to bring up the numbers, they're going to find that we draw the line and hit back hard.
That full interview with Helen Zille is available on BizNews TV on YouTube. I speak to her extensively about her role as the DA's candidate for mayor of Johannesburg. Now, 1 week after the iconic Neil de Beer was laid to rest, BizNews founder Alec Hogg joins Chris Stein on the aptly named NDB Sunday show to announce that Neil's dream of a Liberty Conference will come true on the 9th of March 2026. The conference that Neil and Alec had already been planning will coincide with the big BNC 8 conference. On the agenda will be talks and brainstorming on economic liberty, freedom of expression, the rule of law, and sovereignty versus overreach by the state. Let's dip into Chris and Alec's conversation.
When Neil de Beer died so untimely recently, there were still items on his agenda that he would have liked to have ticked off. And one of those was a Liberty Conference. And in fact, Neil and Alec had been planning and structuring that conference over time. And unfortunately, Neil will not be with us to see that vision realized. But Alec is here to try to tell us how he's going to take the dream forward. Welcome, Alec.
Oh, what a privilege to be on the NDB Sunday show. Thank you, Chris.
Alec, when do you envisage this Liberty Conference will take place?
Well, I can give you a date. How's that? It'll be on the 9th of March, 2026. And I'll tell you what Neil had in mind was he felt that our liberties in South Africa were under a lot of threat. And he was suggesting that actually he was looking to have the first one in September, which would have been wonderful that he was hoping to attend. He was hoping he'd be okay for that. As it happens, it wasn't the case. But we're not going to let the idea go. And this will be coinciding with our BizNews BNC 8 conference. So the way we had spoken a little bit about it, he'd given me some of the ideas. And the way to take it forward would be that we would put it at the same time or around the same time as one of the BizNews conferences. Hence, it was going to be in September, which was where our investment conference is. But now we will have it immediately before the big conference of the year. So immediately before BNC 8, we'll have the Liberty conference on the Monday, and BNC 8 then starts on the Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And that would give the people who want to come and talk about South Africa's freedoms being under threat and what we should be doing about it, the opportunity to come to a separate event. And for, of course, the 600 people who are attending, who will be attending the BNC conference, for them also to come a day earlier and to attend it. So I got a feeling the tickets are going to go quite quickly, but we will have it in the main marquee. So it'll be able to host 600 people. And I think a real testimony to Neil De Beer's spirit and to the fact that his ideas and his vision will live on.
Michelle's the mom who traded in her Fiat 500 for this beast right here. But why the momentous move, huh?
I needed something bigger to keep up with my growing son and his many sports bags.
When you traded in your car with WeBuyCars, was it an easy conversion?
I see what you did there. The process was just so easy. I was given a tablet, had to sign, and that was it.
Basically, WeBuyCars is no mess, no fuss. Okay, it was nice chatting. WeBuyCars, the easiest way to sell your car by far.
Saka Liha has become involved in a previously low-profile seven-year legal battle over a 34-hectare farm worth an estimated 60 million rand, which was expropriated for nil compensation by the ANC-EFF-controlled Ekurhuleni Metro. Here's Saka Liha's CEO, Piet le Roux, who says the case has massive political, economic, and social implications.
The former owners and the new owner, the Ekurhuleni Metro, will have to have a court-directed mediation take place on 31 October. It's unlikely that that will yield a positive result. But in the case it does, then everybody will be grateful, I think, and market value will be restored. If that does not happen, an 18-day trial has already been set down for February next year. An 18-day trial with senior counsel on both sides of the equation here. That's a multi-million rand exercise. So the owners are already facing serious losses just for the years of delays, the legal costs, the opportunity costs, and so on. And then I suppose if the municipality really wants expropriation without compensation, it'll go to an appeal, because that process next year is in the High Court. Or the owners could appeal if they don't get market value for their property. And so we're still looking at years after that. And I think, Alec, this is why it's important yet again to mention that the new Expropriation Act makes so much of these problems easier to occur. And with the old protections in place, this has been a multi-year, multi-million rand legal process. With the new act, this will be a multi-year legal process with much less chance for the owners to actually get what they want. And that's why Saka Liha will be challenging the Expropriation Act. Our legal counsel is putting together the papers as we speak. And over the next few months, we aim currently to have this brought by the end of October. There may be some delays or some it may be brought forward depending on the matter. But we are very happy to be able to integrate the facts of this case into our constitutional challenge against the Expropriation Act, because it illustrates the shortcomings of the new Expropriation Act very clearly.
In international news, Trump says there may very well be a government shutdown. He says they will continue to talk to the Democrats, but that he thinks there may well be a closed country for a period of time. President Trump made these comments in a press briefing from the Oval Office.
Remember this, we had an election a very short time ago. Republicans won presidential. We won the popular vote by a lot. We won all seven swing states. We won the Electoral College by a lot. We won most U.S. counties in a total landslide. So we won most. It's a very big statistic. We won the counties in a number that I don't believe has been hit before, 2,600 counties versus 525 counties for the Democrats. So the Democrats really should start respecting what takes place at the voter booth. In many cases, it's not a voter booth because they have mail-in voting, which is a very corrupt situation. But despite that, we won in a landslide. And we have to remember, when you win the election, elections have consequences. So we'll continue to talk to the Democrats, but I think you could very well end up with a closed country for a period of time. And we'll take care of the military, we'll take care of Social Security, we'll take care of the things that we have to take care of. A lot of the things that Democrats fight for, which in many cases aren't very good things, will not be able to be paid. So we'll watch and see how they do with that. They'll have to handle their constituents pretty carefully.
In international company news, New Street Research talks to what NVIDIA gets out of the deal with Intel. They speak about how NVIDIA can benefit from investing 5 billion rand in Intel. This agreement comes less than a month after President Trump sealed a deal for a roughly 10% U.S. government stake in Intel. Let's take a listen.
NVIDIA gets a lot of positive elements out of these partnerships. First, they build goodwill with the U.S. administration, making Intel like a strong player in the global tech ecosystem is a priority for the administration, making the company, you know, like one of the best assets we have to maintain leading edge manufacturing in the U.S. Then second, very simply, a lot of NVIDIA clients were very keen to be able to have x86 within their giant NVIDIA clusters. So NVIDIA is simply answering a very simple request from these clients. And last but not least, with like the incredibly dominant position NVIDIA has in the data center world, it's always good for NVIDIA to show that they are not abusing their dominant position. And so opening NVLink, partnering with other players, giving access to other CPUs in their GPU clusters is actually a very, very good thing to do. The downside for NVIDIA is virtually nothing, because as Jensen put it yesterday, it's going to be about either selling ARM CPUs they purchased from TSMC or selling x86 CPUs they purchased from Intel.
That brings us to the end of this BizNews briefing. We'll be back tomorrow with more context on the global and local front. Thanks as always for watching.